This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Raphael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Raffi, welcome to the show.
Great to be back, Newell. I apologize. I played hooky last Thursday, and look what happened because I did. You know,
hell broke loose for sure. I know you've had your finger on the pulse of this situation and investigation. I think you have access to some information that we've not heard before. Let's go through, if you would, kind of the timeline of this this escape and how they were able to pull this off.
Sure. So first and fundamental, I think it's important that the audience understands the security model for the jail. Very simply, security in the jail is based on two factors, technology and guards making sure that the inmate security protocols are not being compromised and the jail remains safe. So there's technology and humans that are there to make sure that the inmates are abiding by the rules and everybody remains safe. So what we saw with this escape was both of those fundamental platforms compromised, both technology and the physical guards. So the next step is for, I think, the audience to understand the layout of the jail. So the inmates that escaped were in a pod, and every pod has 30 cells that are two bunk cells. So there's two beds in each cell. So a maximum total of 60 inmates per pod. Every pod is supposed to have a physical deputy assigned to it at all times, meaning that that deputy is on the floor of the pod, walking around, visible, able to observe, and make sure that the inmates are in fact complying. Every pod is viewed by a security booth. So a security booth oversees two pods. So the pods are laid out where the security booth that's manned either by a deputy or a civilian guard can look at the camera feeds from the pods in this security booth module. In addition to the live camera feeds, they also have a cell panel, which indicates if the cell doors are open or closed. And if the cell doors are open, there's a red light on the panel. If they're closed, it's a green light on the panel. So that's the construct. So what happened on Thursday, May the 15th, the inmates are locked down for the night. They're put to bed at 10:30 at night. So when they're put to bed, they're put in their cells, and their cells are locked. That means that in the security booth, the panel is going to read green if the door is locked. So the guard that is supposed to be there is supposed to check the doors. So there was no guard on the floor of that pod on Thursday night, Friday morning, May the 15th, May the 16th. So that meant that that pod was being monitored by the civilian or deputy that was housed in the monitoring booth, meaning that they have the ability to visually look out of their window and see the inmates in the pod. And if they're in their cells and they're supposed to be locked down for bedtime at 10:30, if an inmate is out of their cell, that's a problem. So the pod civilian can observe that, and then if he can't see something, that's supplemented by the camera feeds. So he's got camera feeds that are supposed to basically give him a full field of view of everything that's happening on each pod. On top of that, you have the door lock panel, which is going to indicate if the inmates are in their cell door is supposed to be closed and locked. And if it's locked, as I said, it's going to be a green light. If it's open, it's going to be a red light. So we know that sometime after bedtime on Thursday, May the 15th, which really morphed into Friday, May the 16th, because at 12:30 a.m., an inmate was captured on video tugging on the door of a closed cell. It's supposed to be locked, but the inmate is tugging on that door. So first thing is the inmate that tugged on that door had to leave his cell to tug on that door because that was some 2 hours after they were supposedly locked in their cell. So the inmate that was captured tugging on that cell means they got out of their cell. There should have been a notification. And if the cell wasn't locked, the panel in the control booth should have indicated that it wasn't locked. So he's tugging on that door and he pulls it open. If that door is locked, you can wrap a chain around the bumper of a truck and not pull that door open. But he's pulling on it because the locking mechanism has been compromised because inmates have clogged the locking mechanism with toilet paper. So they know that it's closed. The inmate knows that it's closed, but he knows it's not locked. And he's tugging on it, and eventually he gets it open. But apparently, the person that was supposed to be in the booth watching it, looking at the camera feeds, and looking at the cell panel that's determining whether the cells are open or closed, they decided to go to lunch. So there's literally nobody watching that. Now, this is information that's released by the sheriff's office. So this is going to be what the sheriff is officially saying in all of this. We may find out that, you know, that there may be new disclosures in all of this. But all of this is based on either the videos that have been released and or what the sheriff has reported in this. So sometime between 12:23 and 1 a.m., at least five other cells are open because a total of 10 inmates poured through the hole in the wall that was created from the cell that was being tugged on, and a toilet was removed from the wall, exposing a hole in the wall. So 10 inmates that weren't in that cell escaped through that hole in the wall. And between 1 a.m. and 8:30 a.m., no one noticed that the inmates were gone. So both the technology was compromised, which is the basis of the security model, and the guard. So this civilian employee that was working in the control booth apparently went to lunch. No one has disclosed when they came back from lunch. No one has disclosed whether the cell door control panel was operational or not. So the sheriff is claiming that several of the cameras were compromised and not working. Made no disclosures as to the cell control panel, we don't know. But if we do know that if it's working and the cell doors are not locked, a red light is on, and we do know that if it is locked, it's a green light. So if that control booth civilian returned from lunch, that panel should have alerted them. Now, on top of that, you know, the argument is, well, we didn't have a guard to deploy on the pod. Well, every shift, there is a lieutenant and a sergeant, and they make rounds through every pod during every 12-hour shift. And between the sergeant and the lieutenant, there's supposed to be at least three inspections where the sergeant or lieutenant goes on every pod and checks to make sure that the inmates are conforming with the conditions of a lockdown, if there is. So at nighttime, even though the inmates are in their bunks, supposedly, the lieutenant and the sergeant are supposed to go into that pod and observe and make sure that the inmates are there. Apparently that didn't happen. So all of those procedures in place were compromised and failed. We know the inmates left the facility about 1 a.m., and we know that because video cameras captured that. So sheriff's talking about cameras that, you know, the numbers of cameras that weren't operational. About a third of them, she says, were not operational, but there are 900 cameras in that facility. And we know that the cameras that were operational has, you know, a visual video feed of the inmate attempting to force open the door of the cell in which the escape occurred. We know that the cameras in the docks, which was the other side of the hole of the cell that the inmates escaped through, that's supposed to be closed and dark. And you can see the inmates, you know, running through this dark facility. So we know those cameras were working. That's going to be observed by another camera outpost somewhere in the jail, but apparently no one noticed that. And then when the inmates escaped into the yard and climbed the fence and ran across the interstate, the camera feed there captured those inmates, but apparently no one observed that either. So the next opportunity to maybe catch the fact that an escape had occurred would have been at the breakfast seating every morning. So every morning, the commissary people bring in food trays for breakfast for each inmate that is on a particular pod. So they don't, even though it's 60 beds, if there's not 60 inmates on there, they don't bring 60 trays. They bring the number of trays that correspond to the number of inmates that are housed on that particular pod. So at 5:15 in the morning, when breakfast was served and the inmates were released from their cells to eat breakfast, they had 10 unclaimed trays. Nobody bothered to check why 10 inmates didn't eat breakfast. All they had to do was stick their head into the cell with a hole in the wall, and they would have discovered why the 10 inmates weren't there for breakfast. But that didn't happen at 5:15. Shift change occurs at 6:30 a.m. When there's a shift change, there's supposed to be a head count performed. But for some unexplained reason, the head count didn't occur at 6:30 a.m. at the shift change. The head count wasn't officially confirmed until 2 hours later at 8:30 a.m. So, you know, here it is. The inmates escape at 1 a.m. And we're looking at 7.5 hours later, it's confirmed that there has been an escape. Doesn't say when they discovered the hole in the wall. So how hard is it, once you see the hole in the wall, to look at the video feeds and you can quickly determine how many inmates escaped? Yet the notifications that were given... Yeah. Pardon me?
You just count them. You count them as they go by the camera.
Exactly. 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 So the initial report that was given to law enforcement as to the number of escapes was initially 7. Then it was amended to 11. And then it was changed to 10. So it took 7 hours for the sheriff's office to determine that 10 inmates had actually escaped at 1 a.m. They couldn't get that right. And keep in mind that those inmates didn't escape from all over the jail. They escaped from one pod.
One pod.
And they have video footage to verify when, how, and how many escaped. And they missed opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to ring the bell. So, you know, we're lucky that we have 5 in custody, because the inmates essentially had an 8.5 hour head start on law enforcement being notified. In fact, I checked with one of the law enforcement agencies, one of the primary law enforcement agencies. They weren't alerted by the sheriff's office. They saw a posting on social media that inmates had escaped, and it was Louisiana State Police then that called up the sheriff's office to verify that an escape had in fact occurred. So one of the primary law enforcement partners in the city wasn't informed by the sheriff's office. They had to inquire to the sheriff's office as to, you know, confirm that an escape had occurred. But that was 8.5 hours after the escape occurred. And the public
in reality, this is much worse than what's been revealed thus far. I mean, this is, you know, and I talked a little bit about this the other day, is horrific, because there were so many opportunities to actually notice that these individuals had escaped or were about to escape. But because of the breakdown in supervision or lack thereof, that, you know, this is just busy work for people. I mean, when you talk about the trays and the count, and there's no independent thought going on, we're just moving paper from one stack to the other, so to speak, you know, and just going about our business, no big deal.
Right. I mean, you know, this wasn't like Shawshank Redemption, where somebody, you know, carved out a hole in the wall and then covered it up with a poster of Raquel Welch, you know, so you couldn't see the hole.
Yeah.
This was, they pulled the toilet from the wall, exposing the hole in the wall. They didn't bother trying to pull the toilet back to conceal that. In fact, they wrote graffiti on the wall, you know, mocking the fact how easy it was for them to escape from the facility. And nobody, apparently it took them about 8 hours to poke their head and realize in that cell and realize why the 10 food trays weren't claimed that morning for breakfast at 5:30 or 5:15, because they climbed through a hole in the wall that they left open and left a mocking note on the wall with graffiti saying how easy it was to escape. But, you know, apparently, you know, both the technology and the physical human security that was supposed to be deployed there failed in that particular thing. So to make a bad situation worse, that jail is under a consent judgment. It's different than a consent decree. It's a consent judgment. So with the NOPD, you have the Department of Justice and the City of New Orleans as the parties to
that consent decree. Yeah. Let me interrupt you 1 second, because let's get to a break before we start on this segment, because I think this is going to go longer than we have right now. So we're going to get to a break. We're visiting with Raphael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We're getting a lot of information that's not been revealed as of yet as to what actually the failures as it relates to security protocols in the jail. Stay with us. There's more to come. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Nerds. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
We are back. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We're going through the timeline of the jailbreak. Five inmates have been captured, five still at large, a contingent of over 200 officers out there looking to try and catch the remaining five. Rafi, there's a number of things you talked about that are really troublesome. Right. I mean, just a breakdown in so many security protocols internally. Obviously, lack of supervision, probably lack of training, lack of caring.
Well, exactly. So the question is, you know, how long has this been going on? Well, normally we wouldn't be able to know that. But because that jail is under a consent judgment and it's been that way since 2013, they have federal monitors that have gone through, reviewed the processes, the protocols that are in place in the jail. They observe what's going on and they document what's going on. So they issue semi-annual reports on tracking the compliance of the sheriff's office with respect to the consent decree, and they've been doing this since 2013. So Sheriff Hudson has been in place as the sheriff for 3.5 years now. And the most recent report issued by the federal monitors in October of 24 documented some direct supervision deficiencies with respect to the deputies maintaining their own, you know, announced schedule for day and night inspections, so checking on the inmates. So they've documented that. And in fact, in the October of 24 report, they point out that 4 years ago, under Sheriff Gussman versus the October report, 4 years ago, the sheriff's office was in compliance with 118 provisions of the consent decree. 4 years later, they were only 73 areas that the sheriff's office was in compliance with. And they talked about the fact that they were not properly segregating high-risk violent offenders from the inmate population. We know that of the 10 people that escaped, I think
you mean residents, right? Not offender or inmate.
Well, yeah. I mean, any way you slice it. I mean, this is. I guess we have to make fun of it because otherwise it's unbearable. But you know, apparently these residents checked out early. And what we're finding out is that, you know, the federal monitors have been warning about this for years, as recently as last year. And, you know, these reports are not just an exercise in I gotcha. These reports that they issue help the judge that is administering and deciding the future of the jail with the inmate security and the deputy security first and foremost in all of this, whether the sheriff's office is making progress. Now, we know that there is an election coming up in the fall, and the sheriff announced recently that she's pausing her campaign for reelection. We know that a number of people have announced their intention to run for that office. So, if the sheriff elects to not run for that office, and qualifying begins in July, but whether she runs or not, the election is in October. But whoever wins the election doesn't assume office until May of 2026. So if the sheriff...
Actually not till July 1.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Okay, so it's even worse. Even worse. So she's going to be in office. Even if she elects not to run for re-election, unless she resigns, she's going to be in office till next July. So what can be done to prevent this from happening? Well, there is another potential thing that needs to be considered, and that is that because of this consent decree, the judge in this matter, Judge Lance Affrick, you know, who's been in charge of this since 2013, has the option to put the jail into receivership or a form of receivership where the judge has the authority to appoint a special master that would be responsible for managing the day-to-day operations of the jail. He's already done that once during Sheriff Gussman's tenure. For a period of time, a special master was put in place, and the sheriff remained with the title, but the decisions about the day-to-day operations and the chain of command and answering to people were through the special master. That could be in play because there was a closed-door hearing on Monday of this week in federal court. In this, the federal monitor was present for that. The sheriff was called, and a number of other individuals were called before that. So those are, you know, that's what's in play right now. I understand that, you know, yesterday the attorney general and the district attorney's office took a tour of the jail, and in a press release that was released by Jason Williams' office yesterday evening, they termed it a review of the crime scene. So someone from the media called me this morning and informed me that subpoenas were issued by the New Orleans District Attorney's Office requesting information, all the telephone text messages received to and from Sheriff Gussman. So that's the beginning of, you know, a criminal investigation.
To and from Sheriff Hudson.
Hudson. Yes.
Yeah.
So, so that's the beginning, the first salvo of what is surely going to be a criminal investigation to determine what she knew and when she knew it, And, you know, there's a lot more that we don't know than what we know today. I'm sure in the weeks ahead, we're going to learn a lot more. But priority number one is to find those last five inmates and then to do a forensic deep dive to determine what were the circumstances that led to this escape, what areas were, made the sheriff's office vulnerable to this, and then also to determine if there were any crimes committed with respect to this mistake. So I think it's interesting. It's certainly a bad look for the city of New Orleans, in particular for the Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office. But the only good that can come from this is determining what went wrong and identifying the procedures to correct what went wrong to reduce the potential of this occurring in the future.
Let me ask you this. I have a couple of observations. I think the best course of action would be for Jason Williams to recuse himself and to have somebody completely independent of the city of New Orleans that's not working inside the Orleans criminal justice system at the present time conduct this investigation. He is already has already announced his support of an opponent to Sheriff Hudson. The optics, in my view, just don't look right. And because of the interaction between the district attorney's office and the criminal sheriff on a daily basis, there have been allegations that there are cases that have been brought to the DA's office as it relates to battery on officers inside of there and everything else. I just think it would be cleaner if he recused. Your thoughts?
I agree. And, again, so I haven't seen the subpoena that went out. If it's just for cell phone records and there is some cooperation and coordination between the DA and the AG's office, if they get those records, you know, those records speak for themselves. The DA's office can provide them to the Attorney General's office. I would suspect that for the reasons that you just described, and if there are officials that are employees of the sheriff's office, particularly management employees of the sheriff's office that may have some criminal responsibility, I believe that the district attorney's office will recuse themselves. But I think that for the purposes of a criminal investigation based on what you described, I agree with your analysis and I agree that, you know, he should officially recuse himself, but right now they're just on a fact-finding. I think if it comes to charges are going to be filed, I think his office needs to recuse itself.
Yeah, I mean, when you issue subpoenas, you're beyond fact-finding. You know, it looks and smells like an investigation to me.
Yeah.
I know if I was on the receiving end of that subpoena, that's the way that I would interpret it.
Well, again, so as easy it was for him to fire off a subpoena request, it could have been just as easy for the Attorney General's office because they have an active presence in the city of New Orleans.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, you know, because there's going to be a number of reviews that are done by DOC and others. A lot of that information is going to be easily transferable into an investigative report. And because I asked the AG the other day, she was on this show, about who's going to be the collection agency of all of this stuff and finalize a report, because it's all interrelated, right? The basic jail guidelines, are we adhering to them? I know DOC's in there conducting an audit at the present time, accepted practices, security protocols, the construct of the building, the maintenance of all of this. There's now a tug of war between the city and the sheriff as to, you know, getting on a financial software system. I mean, it's really almost kind of laughable that we find ourselves at this position. One saying, I don't have the money to do what I'm doing. The other saying that, well, we've increased your budget 24% over the last 5 years, greater than any other agency within the city. You know, you've got these competing friction points going on in allegations. I mean, it's going to be – it's a mess right now. And the point I'm getting to is the special master may be the only solution, quite frankly, in many respects.
So we'll see how that plays out. That is a possibility,
Yeah. All right, let's get to another break. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Nerds. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.